But the reason we are here tonight is to welcome our special guest from Santa Barbara, the Junkyard Dogs group, Chris K. Come on up.
Good evening. My name is Chris. I'm an alcoholic. Glad to be here. Thanks, Glenn, for asking me to be here. You know, I've spoken here once before, but it's always like an honor and a privilege. You know, they say, and people overstate that sometimes, but I mean, what did Rosie say? I owe my life to Alcoholics Anonymous, right? I build my life around Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've had to do that, but I've found that it's been a pleasure, and I'm happy to be part of this thing. I have a sponsor, Darren P., sitting right there. I have a home group, the Junkyard Dogs. Whoa. And I have a sobriety date, which is October 2nd of 2012. Now, the hard part about these things is, do I get up here and I could tell stories all night long, right? I mean, do you guys probably have a lot of stories? Looks like there's a few alcoholics here, right? You know, calamity, you know, hilarious stuff, embarrassing stuff, you name it. Just kind of, you guys probably want to know a little about who I am. I'm from Santa Barbara, California, born and raised. And my father was also an alcoholic, so this was in my family. And there's heavy drinkers sprinkled around elsewhere as well. I'm an only child. I don't know if that has anything to do with alcoholism, but there is the word selfishness, I believe, in the big book. And it wasn't hard for me to be that way kind of out of the gate. So I don't know. That's just putting it out there. I had my first drink. I mean, there's pictures of me as a little baby with my German grandfather holding this killer German beer stein. I'm part German, part Norwegian, some other stuff. And I've got these big old eyes, and I kind of look like I do now, about the same amount of hair. And there's my big wide eyes, and he's got this beer stein, and I'm taking that gulp of beer out of the beer stein, you know, and I look back on that now, and I go, man almighty, you know, because that was actually probably my first drink was... I mean, I'm in this little baby suit. I'm like 1 or 2 years old tasting this beer out of this thing. My parents were great people. I wasn't somebody who can claim that I was brought up in a horrible background, terrible environment. I was actually given all the things a kid could want, you know. My parents divorced when I was very young. Santa Barbara, California, I don't know if any Dodger fans are in here, but the single-A baseball team for the Dodgers used to be in Santa Barbara. My mother met my father at one of those single-A baseball games, and then I became part of the planet. So it's amazing how this stuff goes down. But, I mean, my parents did not get along. My parents got divorced very quickly, and I think it was alcoholism that probably drove them apart. I was about 4.5, 5 years old when my parents divorced. And I went to live with my mother, and my father at that point was a police officer in Santa Barbara. Don't hold it against me. And I was raised primarily by my mother. And, now I look back on it, my mother was almost, you could have almost sworn she was like somebody who was in Al-Anon for 500,000 years, because the way that she lived her life was absolutely the stuff that this book talks about. Doing for others before me, thinking about others before me, treat others the way you want to be treated. All this stuff my mom pounded into me, you know. I'll be damned if I could necessarily do that all the time. But, you know, it wasn't like I wasn't exposed to the right way to live. There's no question about it that I was. One thing about me when I grew up is I was good at a lot of things, but I was also painfully shy in a lot of ways. And I'll tell you what, when I first discovered alcohol, the first time I was under the influence of alcohol was, I guess we can call it graduation from 6th grade, because that's what my buddy's parents wanted to call it, because they were going to drink and then... You know, it was an excuse for them to party. It's actually a guy that's on the panel on our Monday meeting, Morgan. First time I was drunk was at Morgan's house. His parents are handing around the champagne. I'm 12 years old. Me, Morgan, these two little girls that were our girlfriends. And I'll never forget the time, the way that made me feel. Because, I mean, I was really, especially around women, I was like really unsure of myself. You know, from a young age, it's like I was just frightened. It was fear. But, I mean, once that drink went in, man, it's like, oh my God, I can talk to her. I can actually open up. I don't know if you guys can relate to what I'm saying, but I mean, men and women drink essentially for the effect produced by alcohol. It says that in the book. And then it also says the effect is so elusive that many pursue it to the gates of insanity or death. You know, alcohol changes people. It changed me. You know, there's Jekyll and Hyde in the book. You know, I look back on some of my behavior and it changed me, but it was positive, man. You know, it connected me, you know? I was part of life at last, like the book says. You know what I mean? I felt like alcohol, once I discovered liquor, I felt like I was part of life at last. That little 12-year-old thing, that was when I was 12, that was kind of like an anomaly. I didn't continue to drink. I was a good kid. I was a very straight arrow kid, and I was not involved in a lot of stuff that you'd want your kids involved in. But there was a point in high school, it kind of went through, and I'm playing sports. I'm successful at a lot of the things I do, but I'm just, like I said, I have a very hard time at this point approaching people. I'm very nervous in my own skin. And there was something about, this is going to come later, but I mean, this is where alcohol became my solution, I think. I played sports at a very high level for a while. One of my things is my dad, as I mentioned, was a baseball player. I also was as well. And played at a very high level, played throughout high school, made some very good major accolades. I had a lot of plans surrounding baseball, and I thought that's who I was going to be. And injuries said otherwise, and it was by the end of my senior year in high school, I was done. And I remember the first time I really got drunk was that summer in between junior and senior year. There used to be these little parties down at this beach called Hammond's, which is close to where I used to live. Hammond's Meadow. Keggers. And all the little girlies are down there. All of which I'm too frightened to talk to. You know? But something happened this night. It was me and these two buddies of mine, and I'm like, screw it, I'm going to drink. Somebody had brought, I don't know, as lame as this sounds, it was Boone's Strawberry Hill. Oh, yeah. And it worked. I mean, Boone's Strawberry Hill did the trick, man. You know, and I'm talking to this girl that I'd been looking at in the hallways all wide-eyed, but man, I'm just freaked out, you know, and suddenly I'm talking to her, you know? So, I mean, it worked. I mean, it worked for me. Everyone else seemed to drink a lot more. There was a crew of kids in high school. They were all like kind of just this cool crowd, surfers, partiers, whatever. And I was not part of that. I was part of the jocks, but kind of went to school and didn't party, didn't hang out with those kids. And it kind of hurt me because I felt like I kind of wasn't a part of, I don't know, you guys, most high school, you know, I was not part of that high school party scene whatsoever, quite honestly. And so I kind of felt like I was missing out. And when I first got that one feel after that Boone Strawberry Hill, it's like, oh my God, this is what I've been missing. This is it. No wonder. No wonder everyone's having such a good time. So anyway, long story short, I graduate high school. It turns out that my baseball career, you know, that, like I said, I had really placed all my hopes and dreams and emotions on becoming that. And through a series of really bad injuries, it became painfully obvious that that wasn't going to happen. And I don't know how it washed through me at the time, but I just remember there at some point, you know, and I was in, got to college, it just kind of switched. I'm like, okay, that part of this is over, so we're going in the other direction. And it was all about the party. It was all about everything that goes along with that, you know. I don't know what it was, but I mean, it worked. I mean, this thing worked. I mean, I don't know about how you guys feel. I mean, alcohol worked for me for a long time in a very positive way. It's not like it was just immediate gutter drunk. Oh, there's Chris passed out at the party. Oh, there's Chris with this, that, and the other. Of course, that all happened later, and we'll get there. But it worked, man. Like I said, it connected me to people. I was part of life at last. I mean, it was electric, and I felt like Superman when I was under the influence, and I didn't feel like I could be stopped on a lot of levels, you know? And, you know, it worked for a long time. I was going through school. I actually ended up going from Santa Barbara High School. I graduated, ended up doing a year at Santa Barbara City College, and then I transferred to the University of Arizona. When I started college is when my drinking career really, really started. Through high school, there were a couple drunks, that one I mentioned at the beach, a couple other little things, but nothing continuous. When I hit college, boom, it was on. I knew my baseball career was over. I had walked on to the University of Arizona, one of two guys that had made the team as a walk-on, stayed with the team for most of that year, and then was cut because they couldn't keep me. There was people that were on full scholarship and all that stuff, and, you know, I walked away from that field absolutely devastated. Now I knew it was over. No more, Chris is no longer going to be that guy everyone said he's going to be. And I really didn't know what the hell I was going to do. You know, I'm out there getting my degree and I'm doing all right in school and all that stuff, but the partying now is just, it's all about the party. And I mean, I look back on it. It was amazing. I mean, I had some amazing times. It was fun. There was stuff that alcohol brought me through and to things that I probably never would have participated in if I hadn't have, you know, done what I did. But of course, there's this progression. It's that baffling, sneaky thing. I don't know if you guys can understand. It's like when you're in alcoholism or when it's kind of progressing, you don't feel it. Like at the time, like I didn't feel it. I didn't feel like I was part of this runaway train. It's super progressive, and then I've got control, and then I've got nights where it's a circus, and then I'm like very good for a while, or he's worse than I am, so I guess I'm not an alcoholic, you know. And I always had examples and rationalizations to kind of, to, you know, go back on like that. Going through college, I was at the University of Arizona, and I'm doing well in school, and my mother, I'm in my junior year, and my mother calls me up on the phone. My single mother, who's raised me since a little guy, was only really close to her, not really with my father. Call my mom up, and she tells me she has cancer. And I almost just packed up and left, and she knew it. And she goes, "Christopher," and she goes, "Listen to me." She goes, "Don't you dare come home." I mean, she's just telling me, she goes, "You're going to be the first one in this family to graduate from college. Don't you dare come home." I'm like, "I gotta come home," you know, and it's my mom, and that's my everything. And I didn't go home. I listened to her because that's what she wanted. She wanted me to stay there, and I ended up staying there. Miraculously enough, through treatments and stuff, she had gone into remission at that time, and actually at that stage had pulled out of it, you know. But I mean, at this time, I'm going to be honest with you guys. This isn't the most flattering story, but my job is to be honest with folks. We all come from a different situation. You know, when I was at the University of Arizona, I went to school and I worked at a strip club and I dated strippers. And I was drunk the whole time. And cocaine had entered into my life at that point big time. Like my sponsor says, "I've tried cocaine once for about 20 years. had to recycle the joke, Darren, sorry. And you know, I mean, things are just happening, and I think I'm hot shit, you know what I mean? I'm laying by the pool every day, I've got the girl and all this stupid stuff, I'm getting by in school, my mom thinks I'm doing well, but I'm starting to have, things are starting to get a little shifty here and there, you know? I mean, how many times have I wetted a bed? I mean, I'm going to be real honest with you guys. Let's get into it. I wetted beds like a maniac. Even before I even got my first DUI, which is what brought me to my knees here in Santa Maria, you know, the court here I got to know very well. You know, there were times during my heavy drinking where I'm doing great in school. I'm not missing tests. Like Bill talks about where he was too drunk to read or write and all that kind of stuff. I never was actually in that position. I never effed up on that kind of level. But man, I would piss in beds. I would have friends, girlfriends call, "Chris, we had to kind of take your clothes off because you pissed all over yourself and we kind of tucked you in last night." It's like, oh. That's nice. How lovely, you know? And so, I mean, early on, and this is like 1996, 1997, so obviously that doesn't happen to everybody, does it? You know? But I can just rationalize it. Oh, it was the Jaeger. It must have been the Jaeger. It was too much cocaine and then the Jaeger, and I was dehydrated or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I can spin it however I want so that you guys will think it's all good. Or so my friends will not, you know what I mean? Because, I mean, shit, you pissed your bed, Chris. I mean, how do you explain that away? It's like... Yeah, it's a lot of alcohol when you're doing that unconsciously, you know what I mean? But nonetheless, I'm just carrying on, still working at this seedy-ass group of strip clubs, up all night, you know. At this point, my schoolwork, although I'm getting it done, I am waiting till the last second to do stuff. You know, I was pretty good at writing papers, pretty good at getting stuff done, and I would wait till the last second. I mean, I remember the best paper I ever wrote was a summer school. I was drunk the entire time I wrote this paper. Handed it into this teacher, and I got an A+ on it. And this is a teacher that never gave A's. And I'm going, fuck, you know. And so just more positive affirmation that I'm not an alcoholic. You know what I mean? But I was. I mean, the progression was there. It was coming. And I mean, there's times when I'm like, I remember that first time, you know, when you're shaking in the morning a little bit. Like, I don't know if you guys have ever had the shakes. I remember thinking, well, it's not cold out right now. Like, why am I? It's 82 degrees out, and it's morning time in Tucson, Arizona. And I'm shake, rattling, and rolling, dry heaving into the garbage disposal kind of thing. You know what I mean? That was routine. I used to get the worst hangovers, the worst nausea, but I would just power through it. I'm going to the gym, you know? I'm going to get another girlfriend or whatever it is. You know, it's like I'm going to counter it on the other side. It's like no matter what happened last night, you're going to see me at the gym, and I'm going to be this, and I'm going to that. I'm going to put out this appearance so that you think I'm okay. I had my family trick for years. until they weren't, and we'll get to that, you know? But I mean, I'm a phony at this point in a certain way, you know? I'm hiding something that's getting worse and worse. 1997, I graduated from the University of Arizona, May of 97. I'm out there cleaning up the rest of my stuff, getting my apartment cleaned up and all that stuff before coming home. And then my mom's at that point her cancer has come back and it's all over her body. It's everywhere. Everywhere. She came to watch me graduate. She was wheeled off of Southwest Airlines in a wheelchair. And I remember seeing my mom in the wheelchair going, holy shit. I mean, it just rocked me. I couldn't believe it, you know? Graduated from college, went home 2 weeks later, died. She died. I was the first person to see her die. I was the first person to see her body. I went into her room and she was dead. That was June 15th of 1997. And at that point, that's when the heavy drinking, partying, kind of calamity, but still kind of good, I can handle this, you know, I wouldn't stop for the world. That's when things switched. I don't know if I could tell at the time that it did or it didn't, but I mean, at that point, it was kind of like I just put my middle finger up in the air and said, look, here it comes. Watch this shit. You know, and I did that. And I partied as hard as I could. I spent as much money as I could. It's disgusting behavior. It was absolutely the antithesis of what my mom had taught me her whole life. But at this point, it didn't matter because the alcoholism had already kind of shoved its hand underneath my ass and was going like this and was pushing me down the road. I didn't know that. I didn't know that at all. You know? But it's if you think about it, it's kind of what was happening because there was times when I tried to quit for a little while. You know, but why do I feel like such crap when I try to quit? You know, I put the drink down and it's like I start getting all weird and it's like, oh, well, if somebody's going out, don't ask me to go out when I'm sober. You know, I can't exactly be around people in a social situation at this point sober at all. There's no chance because it's the same Chris that was before the party at Hammond's that couldn't talk to the girl. You know what I mean? My solution to all those problems I had was alcohol, but you take the alcohol away and it's still Chris in his same problem. It's those same shortcomings, character defects, things I was, everything, you know? So anyway, 1997, my mother dies. I come into quite a bit of money at that point, you know? The amounts don't matter, but I was very fortunate to come into what I came into. And at that point, man, my alcoholism and addiction, man, I gobbled through that shit. I plowed through that shit. 12 years, it was pretty much gone. You know, I was traveling all over the place, buying brand new BMWs, going to Vegas, snorting cocaine off of CD cases on the 15 out to Vegas, you know, with my buddy holding the wheel, all that stuff we do, you know. Yeah, it was real glorious. At the time, I thought I was real, you know what I mean? Who knows? I don't know what I thought it was at the time, but I mean, all that stuff, that lifestyle, that way of living, the partying, that had already been put in place in college, you know? But now, my life's different. My mom, who was my life crutch, is gone. And all of a sudden, here's Chris, really emotional, you know, immature as all get out with just, boom, here it is, go. And it was kind of like an explosion. I mean, it was over a period of time, but I mean, the thing that's funny, though, here's the subtlety of alcoholism. I'm still employed. I'm not getting fired. I can get my shit together for a few days here and there. You know? It's like the potential A student that, you know, is putting in, you know. Basically, I just settled out in life as a C average everywhere. You know? Alcohol had beaten me down to a point where I'm not really that good at my job. You know, I'm showing up most of the time. I sold motorcycles and boats and stuff for a while. I worked at a gym. And there were times when I was just, you know, I mean, an average day, before I got sober, I mean, I would, you know, the nausea. I mean, I don't know if you guys have had the ridiculous nausea to the point where it's like, you feel like your body parts are going to come out on the next one. I mean, I would like literally be like turning myself inside out and I would be doing that at work into the wire waste paper basket, you know, like that's going to hold it. You know, it's like, let's just get close. It's like, shit, there's an angle. It's like, it needs to go down. It's like, oh, fuck. So, yeah. But that, you know, I suffered horribly, but then I would kind of get it together and come back. And it's just, you know, you guys know the deal, you know, the yin, it's like, I'm in the middle. It's still working, but it's not. It's still working, but it's not. So I'd moved in with a girl at this point. I lived in Santa Barbara. I was there the whole time, Montecito. I'd inherited the house that I was in. I was in half ownership with my family. And I basically, through a series of years, burned their trust completely on that property, you know. I would do things, I mean, I don't know if this sounds like alcoholic behavior, taking the mortgage money that I was responsible for collecting from this duplex and then using that to party and then shoving the mortgage off 1, 2, 3 months in delinquency. And then just pulling it right back from delinquency right before I knew they would send the letter to my aunt or my parent, my grandparents, who were my business partners at this point. How's that for dishonesty? You know what I mean? My own grandparents. That's my dead mother's parents. You know? And I've inherited her half of the property that they were so kind to help her buy after she divorced my father. And here I am just leveraging their and my future because I, you know? At the time, I wouldn't think that I was a runaway train, but now I look back on it and go, holy shit, man. Everything else just gets put aside because I got to go to the bar or I got to buy, you know, a bottle or whatever it is. It over and over and over again. It's routinely 2, 3 months behind on the mortgage. Just regrettable behavior, you know? And so, I mean, this is all the kind of stuff that goes along with alcoholism, I suppose. You know, people that drink heavily or drink normally, they kind of pick it up and do normal things and they seem to keep their act together. I'm lying. I'm just, you know, people come over and knock on the door and I'm either so shot out or drunk. I mean, I'm ducking into the one area of the house where I know they can't see in through the little pierce in the window. You guys know that one? Like knock, knock, knock. There's a certain spot where I know from that window and this window and that, and the light won't catch me so they don't see the thing under the door. How's that for freaking alcoholism? You know, just total fear because I don't want them to find out. Otherwise the cat's out of the bag. Oh my God, Chris, what's wrong with you? You know, I don't know. I don't know what's wrong with me. A couple years after I graduate, first DUI. DUIs, by the way, are what took me to my knees. I mean, everyone has their unmanageability. I mean, shit, life can get bad in so many different ways. DUIs took me to my knees, and we'll get to that. But first DUI, I mean, I was actually right at the legal limit, so I'll just rationalize. I was a .08. It's not that bad. I had a couple beers after I washed my car. You know, big deal. Everyone's telling me, ah, it's your first DUI, don't worry about it. Even the cop said, ah, it's your first one. No, baby. Don't worry about it, man. Don't worry about it. The cop, you know. I got my second one not even a year later. And I was under the legal limit, but I'm on probation from the first one that I was supposed to not worry about. All of a sudden, now we got a little bit of a problem. You know what I mean? Now I've got my second DUI, boom, boom. But I was only a .04. I was half the legal limit. You know, this is, you know, like I've got an excuse, like I'm being victimized somehow. It's like, are you kidding me? Well, how about all the other times they could have pulled me over when I was five times deeper into it than that, you know? It's like, but anyway. All the while still working, like I'm employed, like I never got fired. Somehow I could still get it together enough to get up in the morning and get to work. And if I missed a day of work, it would be something I could explain away and I was good enough to kind of keep it going. Remember once a boss came in one time, I was in the bathroom kind of retching for a while and he goes, Chris, are you okay in there? And I went, yeah, you know, and I'm just, and I mean, I've got, at the time, I've got sweat coming down my face. The sweat probably smelled like vodka or even maybe tasted like vodka, you know. But I mean, I would just white knuckle it. I mean, we're amazing at what stuff we can do, right? How many people can kind of endure the crap we can and then still go out and actually function in the world? I mean, I did this for years. I mean, it's amazing to even think about it now that it's crazy to be sober now and to look back on this stuff. It's like I had none of this perspective at all. I mean, that's why, Rosie, it's like what you said. It's like, thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous, because it actually just rocked me back to all that stuff my mom used to tell me over and over again. But boy, did it take a road to get here. You know, after I'm just going to kind of go through this because DUI is my third DUI was in 04, and that was a nasty one, a .25, and I called my dad, who I wasn't close with, but I mean, I would call my dad when I needed something, you know? My dad was an ex-cop at this point, and he has me call this lawyer in Santa Barbara who's a former cop. He goes, you need to call blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, okay, I'm not going to use the guy's name. So I call this guy up, and he helps me out, and it's my third DUI, and I remember him telling me, he goes, Chris, he goes, if you get another one of these, he goes, there's nothing I'm going to be able to do to help you. You're going to go to prison. It's just going to be a matter of how long. And I remember thinking, yeah, okay. I mean, it scared me for a minute, You know, fear sobered me for a minute, and then I was off again, like the book says, right? Because fear will sober me for a minute. You know, if you just, in an immediate sense, take this away from me or threaten me with prison or what she's going to leave or whatever, within days, maybe a week, I mean, I was driving again. I mean, drunk. But at this time, I'm just, alcoholism's got me under its grip. I mean, there's no chance. I mean, I'm drinking every day now. You know, I'm drinking whatever I can get my hands on. If it's beer, it's at least, 12 to 24. I would drink two bottles of wine like it was nothing. You know, every day, over and over and over, you know. This is where the drinking actually became continuous. Before it was bingier with consequences. Now it's tons of consequences and it's constant. I'm making friends with people around town that are shady. You know, people I should not be hanging out with, people I never would hang out with if I was sober before, but at this point I'm twisted, you know, my perception is warped, you know? And so, you know, there's so much illegal activity. I could probably send myself to prison right now telling you guys all the stuff I used to do with this guy and stuff and all the things we used to grow and houses we used to rent out for the specific purposes of growing stuff. And, you know, I mean, the whole thing finally came crashing down in 2010. I'll never forget. It's January 13th, 2010. It's DUI number 4. That one that lawyer told me about. He goes, Chris, you get another one. That's it. I got it. And I remember I was at the Maverick in San Ynez. It's a Wednesday. You know, and I don't... It's a Wednesday. I mean, yeah. Yeah, yeah. But when I'm drunk, dude, it doesn't matter. Wednesday's Friday, dude. Like, it's Friday all the time. And I remember sitting, and I still haven't lost everything at this point. I've lost a ton. I've blown most of my money. But I've still got a couple cool things. I've got this old Camaro, this old muscle car. And I hop in this thing. It's 12:30 in the morning on a Wednesday in Santa Barbara. And I'm just like, boom, we're going to the Maverick. You know? Just blasting up there. I actually got there, which is amazing in and of itself. And I get in there, and it's just the same. I was so drunk at that point. I mean, I'd been drinking pretty much all day. I don't remember if I went to work or not that day, but I'd had more cocktails than I can count, you know, and more cocaine than I can count. You know, am I allowed to say that in here? I guess I am, because, you know, Bill talks about sedatives and all that, putting him on the rocks. So, I mean, we tend to do all kinds of shit when we drink, you know. And once I start drinking, I'm open to doing almost anything. So just put it in front of me, dude. Do I have any money? Yeah, absolutely, it's on. So I pull out of the Maverick, 2 o'clock in the morning. I'd managed to actually find a female at the Maverick. She's in the car with me. And we had plans to go to the Marriott in Buellton. How romantic is that? And I pull out, and it's pitch black. I don't see anything. I'm savvy about cops, you know what I mean? I'm looking around, and I'm like, okay. I mean, obviously, I wasn't very savvy because I parked the fucking car right in the parking lot. It's like, you dumbass, if you really, you know what I mean? This loud, nasty muscle car. Let's park it right in front of the Maverick. Drunk. It's like, this perception is so gone. I don't even know where I'm at this point. So I get pulled over. I pull out, and I just pull out, and boom, they lit me up immediately. And I remember just, you know that. I mean, that's... I knew it was over, and she goes, "What's wrong?" And I go, "We're getting pulled over." And she starts giving me instructions on how to talk to the cop and what to do and this and that. And I'm like, and I just stop. I go, "Hold on." I go, "It's over." I go, "Little do you know who you're hanging out with right now, but it is very much over for me right now. They're probably going to take you home, and I'm in an enormous amount of trouble." She goes, "What?" And I said, and by the time the cop was already knocking on the window, you know, and they're getting her out of the car and they're going to take her home. And I register another 0.25. It was 2325, you know, nice healthy number, you know. And I had way more in the tank at that point, you know what I mean? Like, I could have drank way more that night. You know how you guys, I mean, do you guys remember at the end? Like, I'm just a machine at that point. I can keep going and going and going and going and going for the most part. But I remember that feeling. It's like I vaguely... had a shadowy recollection of being in the back of a cop car from the Maverick up here to the, I think it was Lompoc Jail they put me in. And I'm just, all that's going through my mind is my dead mother's words, "Christopher, you're going to do so great," as she's dying on her deathbed in 97 in her bed. "I love you, Christopher. Take care of the animals. You're going to do great." I love you. All this stuff is just going through my mind. And I'm thinking to myself, look at where your little boy is now. Look at what I've done. And the only thing that kept going through my mind is, it's over. It's over. All these things I could have become, all these things that they said I could be, it's gone. It's leaving right now. So anyway, I get out of jail. It's 2010. January 14th, I get out of jail. And I've never, ever even been near anything close to this, guys. I don't know the first thing about a step, a higher power, a fellowship, much less a home group. Nothing. But somehow, some way, I knew that at the Alano Club in Santa Barbara, people went there that had problems related to alcohol. And I don't know what it was that led me in there. And to be truthfully honest with you guys, it might have been, oh shit, maybe if I go ahead and jump into AA, they'll see what a good job Chris is doing and they'll give him a fucking break. Sorry for the swearing. I'm just getting a little, I get passionate about this. I'm like, I'm right on the edge of like how I felt. And it's like, that's part of the dishonesty of it. But you know what? I got in here and I caught alcoholism quick because somebody said early on, why don't you kind of try to see if you can see the similarities, you know? And I was broken. When I got to AA, I was that guy in the back of the room who's literally down like this, where there's a tear coming down. I was a mess. I was a total mess, you know, and I wasn't even able to try and hide it. And this is in my hometown where I think I'm hot, this and that. And there's part of me that's concerned that somebody's going to be there that knows me. But at this point, we're beyond that, man. We're way beyond that. You know that feeling? Like, this was a spiritual bottom that I had not reached before, you know? It was a blessing. It was a beautiful blessing. And I went to that Alano meeting. First night I went there, and actually it was 5:30. It was in the evening. And I remember I didn't hear one thing about it. It was just a bunch of scattered conversation. My mind is spinning. All I can think about is jail, my future, prison. All I'm thinking about is prison, really, at this point. How many years? What's going to happen to me in there? It's all I can think about. Anyway, I muscled through that meeting. I went back the next day, same time. Same kind of just scattered stuff. I'm like, what are we talking about? Like, is this AA? Like, I was trying to figure out how this was going to help me with my problems at this point. And that, the second day, I'm still fighting the back, the tears, the whole thing. This guy comes up to me. God bless him. His name's Kurt. Comes up to me. Puts his hand on my shoulder. He goes, how you doing? My name's Kurt. And I said, hi, my name's Chris. And he goes, man, he goes, you really look like you could stand to hear the message of AA. I'm like, oh, okay. And so he pulls this thing. Boom, he was already prepared. This guy knew what the hell he was doing. He pulls out this meeting guide, you know. He's got a Sharpie. And he opens this thing up, and he says, you know what, Chris? You look like you could stand to hear the message of AA. I want you to go to these meetings. He didn't come at me and try to sponsor me and, do you need a sponsor? Blah. Because I don't know anything about this. The word sponsor, I would have said, are you going to give me some money? Like, are you like, I like to race cars. Like, and he sent me off to some meetings. One was the men who have lost their legs. There was another one they're all men stags, by the way. He obviously was very savvy about trying to send me somewhere where there weren't women in the building. Because he knew I needed the real deal, the deal right here. Junkyard Dogs was another one of them. God bless them. And I went in there, and I walked in, and I saw Darren. And actually, I'd known Darren because where I lived in Montecito, Darren had been my neighbor for a short time. We hadn't really been close. We hadn't really talked, but we'd kind of said hi and had some kind of off conversation. But in I walked to the Junkyard Dogs, and there's Darren. I'm going, holy shit, it's my neighbor, dude. Like, oh, my God. Like, this is my fucking neighbor right next to, like... And he comes right up to me. How you doing? And I just remember one of the first things, and it's the blur that this whole thing is. I remember him saying something to the effect of, are you willing to go to any lengths for victory over alcoholism? And are you done drinking forever? Or is this a temporary kind of a stop for you? Are you done? I mean, I didn't really know the answer at that point. But what I did know is the answer when the word no had been beaten out of me at that point. Completely beaten out of me. I didn't have the ability to say no to another person at this point because I am... Okay, so it's a mental obsession. It's a physical allergy. But what holds that together? The spiritual malady. I'm spiritually so broken at this point that I'm just... I'm in so much... It's like the perfect storm. It's like, you know, kind of like how AA came together, just the seconds and inches. I've got the felony case going on. I've got the things from my mother ringing in my head, all these things. And it's just like, and here I am. You know what I mean? And I just, the no was beaten out of me. And I just, he kind of just said, hey, do you want to get started? I mean, we kind of got started right away. He told me to read the book, you know, and I got into this thing and started reading it, you know. And I remember one of the things he said at first, you know, is just kind of try to find the similarities, you know. Because I don't know, it's very easy to come into Alcoholics Anonymous with a little more fight and ego left in us. And I can go, well, you know what? I'm not Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Like, I'm going to look at Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and I'm just going to pick out the pieces that don't pertain, and therefore I'm not an alcoholic. But then it says afterwards, this description should describe him roughly. It's like the book always accounts for everything I want to try to talk myself out of, you know? Because it knows me. It knows me. I'm going to try to prove myself non-alcoholic, right? Did I try all the other ways? Did I ever try to stop drinking? Oh, my goodness. Between 07 and 2010, I would try to stop for maybe a week, 2 weeks. Remember in 09, me and my buddy tried to get to Thanksgiving together. Stopped on November 1st. I remember the way I felt by about the 20th, 21st. I mean, I'm sober as you can possibly be, and I'm just... I mean, I am bristling with everything under the sun that's not positive. You know what I mean? And it's in my mind, and I can't just willpower that thing. I used to think, oh, willpower will stop this, right? If I was strong enough, I could just say, no, man, I'm cool because I'm good. I don't need that. I don't need alcohol. But again, it's like you circle back to back before. It's like alcohol was the thing that was my solution to all my problems in life. So it doesn't matter how old I am. I'm 37 or 8 years old, no alcohol, same problem as I had when I was 12 or 15 years old. I don't really know how to live, you know? I'm selfish, I'm self-centered, I'm afraid of everything on the planet for the most part. I'm gonna do what I can do to make sure you don't think I am, but I am. And I mean, that's just, that's the deal there. But I mean, I get to Alcoholics Anonymous and it was just perfect timing. I mean, I feel so blessed because when I got here, it was just a perfect series of circumstances. And I never forget when I got, you know, when my sponsor and I went through the first couple of steps. You know, step one, I guess, is maybe kind of done out there. You know, I can admit I'm powerless over alcohol, usually after my life has become unmanageable. For me, my life had become so unmanageable, I had to kind of start giving alcohol the credit, which was maybe why I stepped into that Alano Club that day. You know, I think I just kind of... I'd accepted the fact that something's wrong on some level, you know? Came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. It's like, I don't know what that means at this point, but I'm not, again, not willing to say no. It's like those little ABCs. Chris, can you say yes to the ABCs? It's like, if so, then it's on, you know? The program is very specific, you know, where it talks, you know, it takes a pains to go through the first 60 some odd pages, doctor's opinion, Bill's story, solution, more about alcoholism, atheist agnostics. I mean, it's those are the first two steps. It's like half the book. I mean, 164, they call it, is kind of the thing. But those first two steps are enormous. If I can't admit I'm powerless over alcohol, then I'm probably screwed because I've got another plan. So it's like, go try your other stuff so that you can, you know, figure out that maybe you don't have the ability to control it yourself, that you are powerless. The God thing, I'm like, yeah, absolutely. I was actually, my mother was very spiritual. She wasn't like Christian or any of this other kind of stuff, but she believed in components of all that stuff, all the positive good things that are in religion, she believed in. And so I had no problem accepting the fact that, you know, maybe a higher power, you know, could restore me to sanity somehow, you know. And my sponsor, basically, we were at a coffee shop, this coffee shop in Santa Barbara, the Santa Barbara Roasting Company. And it was third step prayer time. And the book talks about sometimes a great effect was felt at once with this. And that was my situation. I felt very, very uncomfortable. Well, Darren made me feel comfortable, but I mean, I had so much respect for him, and I've still got a little bit of tough guy left in me, and I don't want to seem like a complete puss. And so, you know, it's like he goes, give me your hand, Chris. And I'm like, oh, shit, I'm going to hold his hand for a minute right now. I want you to repeat after me. And we, you know, God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. The whole rest of it. And I mean, I'm just repeating it after him, word after word. And I'll never forget, it's like, it's almost like I could feel God was holding me like this. This, the weight of, the collective weight of the whatever is God, the collective power, whatever you guys believe in, it was in this house. My mother, whatever, you know. I knew, let's just say I knew it was time to change. It was undeniable, and I was not willing to say no. And I made my decision at that point. I'm like, I'm going to do this thing, dude. I had no intention of maybe getting, like I said, I came into this, and it was probably nice, I didn't know anything about it. Because I was just willing to do it. And so he gave me the instructions, and I did them, you know. We did the third step prayer, the effect was electric. And then it says, next, you know, it says, because again, you can't pray and then not do something in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's prayer and action. That's why the book says next and at once and all these things repeatedly, because they know I'm an alcoholic and I will weasel out of it. Give me 24 or 48 hours. I got something else to do. I like to procrastinate. I'm a little lazy too, you know? So it says next, and he held me to it. And it's like, dude, let's do the columns. Resentments. I know who I'm pissed off at. You guys know who you're pissed off at when you get to AA? I can't get through it fast. It's almost like a hit list. It's like I can't write fast enough. I know who I hate because it's freaking almost everybody. It's every institution. It's every ex-girlfriend. It's every political view that's not mine. It's every part of the planet or world that's not where I'm from. I mean, I'm just like, F all of it. F you too. And but that's just true. I mean, that's true. And I'm full of fear and all this other kind of stuff. And but the thing is, it's just honest and thorough, you know? Go for it. Don't leave anything out. Don't keep any secrets behind. You know what I mean? Let that thing out. And I did. And I mean, I look back on it now, and some of them I'm like, holy smokes. Like, it was almost over thorough. I look back on it now, I'm like, man, I was pissed off. Like, some of the stuff now, it's like... But I mean, that just shows you how toxic I was at that point, you know? I was that pissed off at the world and my existence, my plight in life. God had done me wrong. Maybe, I don't know if I was resentful against God, but I certainly felt like I was entitled to way more than I was getting. So I had it was a perfect environment to do that resentment list. Boom, boom, boom. What does it affect? What's my part? Oh, my part. Let's see where we're at on time. The my part column, that was everything, man. I was actually in a position where I could see where it was my part. Because you know why? Because it all was. I look back at my poor family, you know? I'm selfish, self-seeking, I'm dishonest, and I'm afraid. On almost all of it. It's called a four-bagger, as we call it. I want what I want when I want, and I'll sacrifice what's good for you if it's going to benefit me at that point. My whole life is on my part column at that point. And it was dead right in front of me. It was undeniable. It's like, look at this, Chris. You know, you can point your finger at them. They didn't leave you the house. Well, they didn't leave you the house because you're drunk and you're fooling around with their money and you're burning their trust and all this stuff, you moron. Of course they didn't leave you the house. You know what I mean? And all of a sudden I'm seeing it. It's like this shift in perception starting to happen. It's like, holy shit, like I'm responsible for what's going on here. But how cool is that? Because I also get to be responsible for changing, which is this bad boy right here. You know, because I don't know about you guys, if I can't just put the plug in the Dasani water bottle and stop drinking, you know what I mean? Put the plug in the jug, they say, or just don't drink no matter what. Dude, I can't do that. Because the spiritual malady is such where if I don't have a solution, like I'm going to get restless, irritable, discontent, fearful, boom, I need that release. Like I'm kind of like an air compressor. They all have like a blow-off valve. They're only designed to go up to a certain PSI and it goes and it lets some out, because otherwise the whole thing's going to, the tank will blow it up, will blow up. Dude, I had a high performance blow off valve. I had to, because I mean, it's like, I will explode without some sort of outlet, you know? But man, I hustled through those steps. Fifth step, dump it all out, 6 hours on the beach with Darren, probably falling asleep part of the time, getting tannered and you know what? It's a great time. I mean, it's times I'll never forget, you know, and just putting it all out there. And step 6 and 7, it's clear after going through 4 and 5, I am loaded with shortcomings and character defects. I'm slothful. I'm entitled. I procrastinate. I think I'm better than you. I mean, I've got all these things that are just the earmarks of an alcoholic. I get jealous and envious, and then I'll let you know about it. Fuck you, you know? Those are shortcomings and character defects, and I was kind of like that my whole life. Well, guess what? When I'm participating in that behavior, I get really uncomfortable. And then all of a sudden I got a drink. It's like all this behavior and the way I'm living and perceiving and reacting and bouncing off life. No wonder the alcohol was the solution. It had to be. Because I got nothing else. You know, I've got nothing else that makes me feel comfortable in my own skin. You know, and that amends list, you know, we get the names written down. You know, it's transfer all this stuff over, subject myself to a drastic self-appraisal, pick up damage. Where did I damage people in this world? Where did I damage the world? transfer all that stuff over. And I just, there's something about the progression of the steps. I just launched into this thing and I didn't, if you would have had me look at, I mean, I read steps 8 and 9. Believe me, I read those suckers before I started the steps because my sponsor had me read the book. And I'm like, I knew it was coming. You're going to make me go up to that guy I threatened to kill. I'm going to have to go and say all these things to my family. Like, I mean, those things were all going through my mind. I was like, fuck. But the thing is I had the power of this thing behind me. Like, I was okay to do it. And I just went, and I went. This guy lives around the corner from us. This guy named Shandor. Could have shot and killed the guy this one day. You know, I called him out into the street, called him and his wife and his kids out to watch. Didn't end up happening, but it was a pretty heavy-duty situation that could have resulted. At that time, I was carrying a loaded gun part of the time, and I just, anything could have happened at that point. I was wandering around. There was times where people would piss me off. I'd be wandering around at night drunk. I would have that sucker on me. It's a good thing it never went off, you know. But, I mean, I made that amends. I made the amends with my family. Everyone that I could really make amends to. I mean, I wanted to get it done. I wanted to bridge the gap, you know. Because it was my part. The whole thing is my part. And he talked about, go clean off your side of the street, Chris. I was wrong for doing this to you. I will never treat you that way ever again. If there's anything I can do to make this right, let me know, you know, et cetera. Keep it on your side of the street. Don't make it about them, Chris. And I did that. And people were, you know, I honestly never wasn't rejected by anybody. I was told not to go into my amends expecting results of any kind. Just to go in and clean off my side of the street, and that's where the results were going to come from, and it did, you know. And I've just tried to follow that up with my family. It's like you make the initial amends, but now it's all about staying in touch with my aunt, my cousins, all these. My poor cousins idolized me for years, and I can't be bothered. I remember overheard my grandma one time say, "Oh yeah, Chris, he can't be bothered." It's like, man, that hurt to hear that, but it was true. It was true because I'm so self-absorbed. You know what I mean? I'm not hurting anybody but myself. No, you're actually hurting all these people that love you that you've abandoned, you know, that you're screwing around, you know, you're all connected and you're the weak link, Chris. So, I mean, I was rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence from this thing, guys. I mean, those are pretty extreme words, but I mean, there's things that are misquoted sometimes in the book about I wouldn't trade my best day drinking for my worst day of this or that, and it's like, okay, you know, that's a little bit misquoted. You could take me right now, sitting in the shower before I came here, you could take me right now, put me back even in the glory days of my previous life. Whatever the glory days, the good old days. I only used to maybe only wet the bed once a month at that point, maybe. I wetted over 12 beds. I had a $5,000 hotel room bill one time for a wetted bed, guys. Bad. How embarrassing is that? It's like, whoa, I didn't know that room was that expensive. That's the mattress, dude, that you destroyed, you know? I mean, I'm trying to put my, it's like self-deprecating humor, but it's like, you know what? This is embarrassing stuff, but this is what alcoholics do. You know, I'm not up here to try to make myself look like some hot shot and look at me, no, Mr. A, and you know. I'm just happy to be here. I feel like I'm grateful to be here to have a chance to do this stuff. I get to work with guys like Alfonso. I mean, do you know how much it warms my heart when a guy like this takes the program and starts running with it? I've worked with probably over 100 guys, a couple hundred guys, and it's like, I just want them to grab onto this thing, man, you know, because I can't make anybody want to do this, but it's like, dude, before I got here, if you could have told me what was in store for me before I got here, I would have said, there's no chance. And now I've just found it's like, oh my God, look at this whole new world. You know, I've got God behind me. I want to make good decisions. Like the kind of principles that are embedded in here, honesty, willingness, open-mindedness. This is all the stuff my mother wanted me to be, for God's sake. I actually say yes now to things. Before it was like I would find any way to say no. I'm like, I got to dodge out of it. Because I mean, I've got to go off and get high and drunk somewhere, you know? So I can't actually be responsible because I got other stuff to do, which involve me and my habit. And so it's given me a life that I never would have had before, you know, and I don't know, I don't know if you guys like music. I love music and God speaks to me through music. And, you know, there's sometimes I'll think about things I'll hear in songs and I'll kind of just weave it into my own experience and just go, wow, you know, and just think about this whole thing. I like very powerful music. It doesn't matter what genre it's from. It can be rap, it can be metal, it can be rock, it could be whatever you want it to be. And there's a band called Tool that sings a song called Sober. You guys probably have heard it before. One of the lines in here, it says, "There's a shadow just behind me." And this is talking about alcoholism. "There's a shadow just behind me, shrouding every step I take, making every promise empty, pointing every finger at me." Like, dude, does that not describe it right there? That's alcoholism right there. You know, and that song was actually written about a guy who was in the band who could not perform without being under the influence. And they wrote that song. So I just feel like the best years of my life lie ahead. I got God behind me. I've got a ton of growing to do. I don't keep in touch with my sponsor the way I should, which is regrettable, but I love him dearly, and I carry him and his advice, everything he said with me everywhere I go, every day, and I try to transfer it to the people I work with, because he's a man of character, and I look up to him enormously. And I love the Junkyard Dogs. I love AA. And, you know, if you're new, I mean, the people that stood up is new. This thing is not really hard to do. This thing is dirt simple. You just have to do it. Just drop your whatevers and just say yes once in a while to somebody who's done it before and seems to have a pretty good life. Because you know what? Saying yes a couple little times and doing a couple little things you don't want to do and then staying semi-accountable and disciplined, like Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me, it's given me the life I have today. Thank you very much.
All right, let's give Chris another round, huh?